am now offering consultation services through Faithfully Engaged. If you're struggling finding a church, dealing with a destructive habit such as pornography, trying to find a way to homeschool your kids but don't know where to start, come check me out. Go to faithfullyengaged.com/consulting to learn more information and to see how we can get started. Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Faithfully Engaged. I'm really excited to have my guest here today, Wyatt Simon. We're going to talk about some real estate investing, financial kind of stability, and really what that means to be financially stable as a Christ follower. Sometimes we, as Christians, don't always kind of know what to do with finances sometimes, and my guest knows all about this. So Wyatt, it's great to have you on. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me on here, Johnny. I'm excited today. So I'm probably best known as the kid that took a $200K line of credit and turned it into a $20 million real estate portfolio. I was just, I spent a lot of time wanting to not have to work for someone else and, you know, eventually was able to do just that. And then now I, you know, want to help as many people as possible be able to reach financial independence and do it for the Lord.
Yeah. Which I'd love that simple mentality there, but being a really important mission there. Let me just kind of start on where this came into. Some people have passions when they're younger, depending on how they grew up or whatever. Did you always have a passion for real estate? Like, how did you get into that to begin with?
No, I did not. I loved basketball, and I went to a very small college in the middle of nowhere, Nebraska, called Doan, to play basketball. That's where 5'11 white guys go. Eventually it became clear that I was not going to make it to the NBA. And so then my passion turned from basketball to, okay, well, if I can't become a professional in basketball, then I know I hated being in my desk job. And so I was like, whatever I got to do to get out of that, I'm going to try to do that. And naturally for me, it went into sales, and then sales turned into real estate. And eventually I just started, I worked a sales career for a while as a foundation sales rep. I did well for myself, and I invested in real estate, and I just kept the cycle repeating. And eventually I was able to leave that job and now just do real estate full time.
Great. Yeah. I'm always interested in hearing people's origin stories, no matter what they're doing. And with, I think for a lot of people that are listening to this, they may not be involved in sales, but all right, you go to a place, you have some product or whatever, and you sell it. Okay, that's fairly simple as far as the underlying understanding of that. Of course, there's more that goes into it than just that. But with real estate investing, I think a lot of people just don't get it. Like, they understand, I've got my own house, but like, why would I get other houses? So what is it about real estate investing that has been successful for you, and why it's so important for your own financial
success?
Well, for
success? Me, I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And so that's the quote unquote purple Bible, right? And in that book, it explains, you know, there are two ways to make money. One is working for it, and the other one is having assets bring you money. And so when I read that book, I was like, man, I just want to have these assets bringing me money so I don't have to go to work, or I'm not forced to go to work. So that was kind of the origin of it, right? And one of the big unlocks for me was I said, okay, well, how much money is going out every month? I was paying $900 in rent, which, you know, is probably $1,400 nowadays with inflation, but it was $900 back then. And so what I did is I bought a duplex. I lived in one side, I rented out the other, and then I even rented out my side. And so now, instead of making that $900 payment, I was actually making money each month just by living for free and renting out my duplex. And so that really helps when you can save $900 a month and actually make $200 on top of that, to now start investing and saving that to buy more of these buildings.
Yeah. No, that makes obviously a lot of sense there, and is obviously can be quite lucrative in that way. For somebody that's listening to this and like, all right, that sounds great. Now, what do? I just go buy a duplex? Like, what do you kind of encourage people to do for that first step to really get in and do that?
Yeah. So if you're looking at this, and I've helped a lot of students do this, but if you're looking at this, like, okay, I don't have any real estate. Well, the first thing I tell you is look at your net cash flow. Are you net negative by living right now? My net negative was $900 a month negative. So how can you make that either a neutral or a positive? And what I mean by that is right now you might not be able to buy a duplex and have it be a net zero. You might still have to pay out money. You might still have to pay if you're at $900 a month, you might still have to pay $900 a month over here. But if you pay $900 a month over here as a duplex owner, now you're starting to build equity and you're starting to have appreciation come into play. So if you ever go to move and you want to sell that asset, well, if you're renting, you don't get anything. But if you're owning, now you get to sell it and you get to make money, which will help you in turn buy more assets in the future. Or you can rent it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's important for people when they, regardless of what it is, in this case, kind of in being able to have real estate, some type of asset that you're owning, or even if it's somebody that's trying to go to the gym, you got to do something. You can't just, you can read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Like, you can read these great books. But if I don't take steps, then I'm not going to do anything. I can read about going to the gym, but if I don't go to the gym, I'm not going to get in shape. So I think it's good to be able to think through some of these actionable steps. And maybe for somebody that is a Christian, that's listening, I know we're really based on the Christian values on this show. Some Christians struggle with being able to have, you talk about, you know, $20 million portfolio. They might hear that like, oh man, like, we're really called to be givers and to not hoard our wealth and things like that. And some Christians might struggle with that concept. How do you make sense of that and be able to encourage Christ followers to use this wealth for good instead of just for greed?
Right. Great. Yeah. Great question. So, I'll tell you this, I'm in a Christian men's business community group where it's all Christian men's business guys. And we meet once a month. And it's really my board of advisors. I'm the youngest guy in the room by about two decades and it's fantastic. But one of the guys that he told this story, we're actually having our devotional and it was in Corinthians and Paul was sharing how we're different parts of the body of Christ. And one of the gentlemen in the group, he was into drugs and sex and alcohol, and he was actually on drugs in a mountaintop. And he said, God, if you're real, show me. And for 2 weeks, he was bussing tables. That was his job. For 2 weeks, he would just say it every day. God, if you're real, show me. If you're real, show me. And there was one day that someone left a Jesus pamphlet on the table. And it changed. He broke down crying. It changed his life. He went into, he quit the job that day and then gave his life to Christ. And in that moment, God met him. And so how does he now meet people? Well, he will always leave at least $100 tip on every single lunch, dinner, anything that he does. He's just a giver. And he leaves a pamphlet with it. And he has seen time and time again where people will break down in tears and hug him and thank him. And and the reason I'm sharing you this is because he is not a Paul. He does not talk very much, but his actions speak for him. And so we as Christians, we are different parts of the body. There are Pauls out there that maybe don't have a bunch of money, but man, they are disciples, evangelizers. And then there are other people that, hey, they use their time and talents and abilities in the financial world to then support the church. And so I can tell you, for me personally, it's about giving, right? I've always tithed and my tithe goes up every single time my income goes up. And that means the church, now we can support more people. We can support more missionaries. And so all of these things tie together as long as we as Christians use our talents and abilities to tie them together.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fantastic story there. And even your own kind of personal testimony there. I know personally on my end as well, just this past year, our church, we're going through a little bit of some financial concerns, and it was one of those where, hey, we're like, we're okay, but we something needs to change. So we're really praying for that. And this year, I do the offering, so I kind of see a little bit more of an inside look there. And the beauty of seeing more of that cash flow coming in out of the goodness of people's hearts, but also for me personally, it's been amazing to see that as my own business has done better and I've been able to contribute more. It's not about like, you know, how great I am or whatever, but all the other people in the church as well, when they are doing well financially and are giving that money, it helps the church. It helps that local body and missionaries, like you're saying too, to be able to go out and support other people spreading the word across the nation. So there's a difference there between of being wealthy and hoarding it, being a Scrooge McDuck type that nobody else gets my money, or being somebody that is freely giving that money. Having that wealth is not a sin. It's what we do with that wealth that can be sinful or not. So I think that's a great, great way that you're challenging us to think about wealth.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I mean, like, I calling a spade, like, financial literacy is a science. It's not an art. It's not something you're blessed with. It's something that can be learned. And so, like, I can tell you, when I was in college, zero financial literacy. I was blowing money. I was doing stupid stuff, right? And then I said, okay, how do I become financially literate? And the simple formula is you look at how much money is coming in as the top of your funnel, and then where are you allocating that money? And how much money is then being invested from there? And so if you have $100 and you have $100 coming in, $100 coming out, and no money being invested and no money being given, well, then you are not financially literate. And so all it takes is taking that money that's coming in and allocating it accordingly. And if you only have $100 coming in, then the next step of it is, okay, how can I increase my earning potential? Right? So a friend of mine, he worked as not an Uber driver, but a Grubhub driver. So he was making $15 an hour. And now he makes over $1 million a year as a real estate agent with his real estate business. And so it is a science. And so we as Christians are called to live different, right? People should look at our life and be like, okay, this person's different. Why is this person different? Well, is he doing it for him, or is he doing it for a stewardship of other people to show that they're different?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love the word stewardship. I think that's such a good way to think of not just your wealth, the money you're bringing in, but your time, your whole being. Are you stewarding it well? Today's day and age, and I'm by no means guilt-free from this, but there's time wasting of being on social media or whatever it may be, to where you're not stewarding your time well. And obviously with finances, sure, you mentioned inflation. There's some difficult things out there as far as making it difficult to get more money, to increase that cash flow and everything. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. What I've seen kind of anecdotally, even in my day job as a counselor as well, that while there are these external things that do factor, inflation, job loss, things of that nature that may be beyond your control, that does factor. But I see more times than not, there's excuses built in there that are kind of limiting ourselves. We're kind of our own worst enemy. Curious to see if you see that in your time as well, and if people do have that tendency to kind of, you know, stop themselves, what do we do about that? How can we improve that?
Yes, the answer is yes. And I forgot you're a counselor, so yes, this is right up your alley. We are our own worst enemy. Stephen Covey, he says, so private victories supersede public victories. So oftentimes we have to get out of our own way to become what we already were. And what does that mean? Like, for instance, for me, it was, I used to be the I'm going to do everything guy. I used to think that I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to do this. Well, in all reality, I shouldn't be the I'm everything guy. What I should be doing, because we live in a capitalistic society, so it's what is your God-given talent and ability that can make you the most amount of money? And double down on that. Do that and hire out the rest. And that is how you start to scale and build and build and build. Like, one of the things I really want to challenge everyone listening to is what are you worth per hour? Right? Think about it. What if someone asks you, what are you worth per hour? What is that hourly rate? And there's no wrong answer, but I want to challenge you to eliminate all of the tasks that are not that hourly rate. And that will simply, if you become aware of that and you just start focusing on doing only your highest hourly rate tasks and doubling down on it and increasing that, that is how you really become capitalistically grown, right? It doesn't mean you add more value to God by doing that, but it does mean you add more value to a capitalistic society. And it means you then get more resources that you can then glorify God with.
That is really important advice there. Something that, talking about with my counseling business, I've been running my own practice for about a couple of years, which has been a very different thing for me. And I know most of you listening are not a counselor or not a real estate investor, but regardless, when you're running your own business, that what Wyatt just said there is everything. When I first started it, I was a website developer. I was a Google like SEO stuff specialist. On top of being a counselor, I was everything. And I learned quickly that, hey, I could do more than I thought I could. I actually made my first website and it turned out pretty decent. But I wasn't able to invest more time to see clients. I wasn't able to do what I was really aiming out there to do. Same thing on this podcast. I've mentioned this several times. I have a virtual assistant. Her name's Katie. She's got her own business called Let Katie Do It. Does virtual assistant services. It's fantastic. And she's been so helpful to me because she does all these little things that you don't think about behind the scenes, making thumbnails, scheduling when the episode goes, just tons of little things. But the amount of time that was taking me, one, it was draining me out. So I wasn't able to see clients as much as I would like to. And two, going back to that stewardship of even time, it gave me less time with my family. I wasn't as engaged with my family. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, there was no way I could keep that up. And I wanted this podcast to be something that I can continually grow over time. And I didn't want to just give up after a few episodes. So with Katie being able to help me out has been tremendous. And even though that has cost more money, I've actually gained money from being able to spend more time seeing more clients and things of that nature. And it's been fantastic. But if you're trying to do what Wyatt's saying, try to be everything to everybody, in every single situation, you will flame out. It's just not possible. And not only will you flame out, you won't even get as much income as you could if you do what you do well and just do more of it. Now, that is kind of the key to success there.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. And to bring it back to what you said originally, it's you are your own worst enemy. It's you have to develop the belief that you're worth what you say you're worth. And then you have to develop the discipline that you are going to stick to that number and actually follow through on hiring the, well, you said Katie will do it. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Let Katie do it.
Yeah. You gotta stick through that. And I mean, I'm telling you this now, like it took me a long time to figure this out. I own a property management company that services the portfolio. So I have 5 full-time employees on that company. and I was doing everything and it was terrible. And so, and then I also hired the wrong people and that was terrible. And so it was a long, hard journey. And it still, I mean, you know, the journey never stops, but man, it definitely helps when you know your hourly rate and you stick to the discipline to find the right people to fill that spot.
Absolutely. And when we take this beyond just the gaining more money, to the Christian perspective, if that is the only goal, we don't think of anything else. It's solely just get money. Eventually we're going to run into issues somewhere along the line. There needs to be something larger than solely just getting money. The getting money is great. Like that's fantastic. But when you are doing a job well, a business well, you're not just getting more money. And it's not even just about giving the money to the church, although that's a fantastic part as well. Think of everybody else that you affect. With me, for instance, my virtual assistant, Katie wouldn't have this gig with me if I don't do that. We're building a house right now. We've got a contractor that's helping us out. We've got lots of local shops that we're getting the wood from and all the materials and different contractors. I'm not just like giving them money like a charity thing, but I'm helping those businesses out as well by using them. Whereas if it's, I think sometimes, especially in the Christian side of things and on the conservative side of things, we have this isolationist mentality that it's just going to be me and myself in a log cabin out in the middle of nowhere. And I don't need anybody else. And that's really not a Christian worldview. Like we need other people. And by you being able to use other people that do their task well, not just like you're saying, hiring the wrong people, don't just hire your cousin just because, like hire people that are good at their job. It's a blessing that you're even helping them out by letting them do what they do well and you focus on what you do well. So it's this whole economy, both in the like the financial sense of things, but in the Christian sense, we can help out even other Christian business owners by letting them do the jobs well, instead of us just feeling like we got to carry everything and we get stressed and then we just don't want to work anymore. And work isn't supposed to be a horrible, terrible thing. God created work as a good thing. We just don't always manage it well.
Yeah. Super well said. Yeah. That is the reason why our economy flourishes when people are all doing well. Because when money changes hands, it's better for everyone. Because you can, and Stephen Covey talks about, so when you become independent, so first you're dependent, right? So like a baby is dependent upon the father. Right. And so without the father, can't do anything. So not really worth much. Then when you become dependent, meaning you can live on your own, you can make money on your own, you can do things on your own. Now you're dependent. When the true miracle happens is when you become interdependent. And that is when independent people choose to work together. And that is when 1 + 1 can equal 10 or 100. Because you're living in your unique ability that you're great at to then function as a unique society and economy and everything else to then benefit. And it's the same thing if you're using your Christian gifts, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you have if you have 100 amazing pastors at a church, well, who's going to stack the chairs? Who's going to run the media team, right? Like how who's going to greet? Right? Maybe the pastor could be good at that. Who's going to run the kids in the daycare? Right? It's like it takes a whole body of Christ to work interdependently to then function. And so happens in all different walks of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you bring the church example in there. Something that I absolutely love about my current church is our teaching pastor he's fantastic. He's somebody that like legitimately could be preaching at like a massive mega church for sure. And he's in our small little church in Comanche, Oklahoma, and he's fantastic. But what I love about it is he preaches less Sundays than in any church I've ever been in. It's still the majority. It's most every month, but there's times that he's on vacation. He takes a little bit more vacation than some churches I've been in. He lets other preachers from like sister churches come in every once in a while, or one of the elders gets to preach every once in a while. I've been in other churches that's like the same pastor every single time. And what I like about it is it's the church isn't our pastor. Like it's all of us. It's the whole body of believers. And it's the people that don't go up and preach. It's the ones that shake hands, that are on security team or helping with the kids. I mean, it's a whole body. It's not just one person up on stage. And when we view church as that, it's all that pastor. Well, what if he leaves? Like now we're in trouble. Like we've got to all be in that body together. And same thing with our business. That local community is important of other business owners. The customers that you have, it's all interdependent. I love that phrase because it's not just you and yourself for your business. It's not just you and yourself for your faith. We don't just do this by ourselves. We have to have that community.
Right. And how do we get there? It's becoming independent. Mm-hmm. So that means becoming financially literate with your finances. That means using your time, talents, and abilities for God, right? And so we have to walk from dependency to independency in these different aspects. And that's why, you know, financially, that's, you know, what I've really focused on. And it's one of the reasons why I wrote this book, right? Which is your first 100 units. So it's how to start building a rental portfolio. It's everything. It's the investor's playbook to scaling a rental portfolio. And it's coming out on my birthday, October 17th. But it is literally everything I wish I had. All the culmination of all the books that I read and all the podcasts that I listened to help start portfolios.
Great. No, I think that's a fantastic resource for everybody that's listening to this. I always tell people even during the episode, I don't always fully know when we'll air these because I pre-record these interviews. But regardless of if you're listening to this before it comes out or if you're listening to this 2 years in the future and it's been out for a while, sounds like that would really be worth your while if you're looking into starting a real estate portfolio like that. Because it sounds like lots of years of wisdom and, like you're saying, stuff that you wish you would have had before you got started.
Yeah. And it's broken out into three sections. So it's how to buy real estate, it's how to systemize it, and then how to scale it. And so the first steps, I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't started, it's how to buy, right? Like what to look for, how to run your numbers, how to make sure you get into a good deal. I share a lot of lessons of my bad deals. and so you can learn from my mistakes. You don't have to go through what I went through. And so that's it. And then once you learn how to buy real estate, then the next step is, okay, how do you systemize it? Because you can't scale it until you've got the systems and the people in place to run it, to have consistent deal flow, to have good bank financing, all of those things. And then once you really get that lined up, then it's okay. How do you take it from, you know, three and take it to 100. And that's kind of the latter half of the book.
Great. Great. No, I think that sounds like a really worthwhile book for sure. I'm curious, just on I've had several authors on the show before, just the process of writing the book. I know that's probably a little bit different than what you're used to doing. Was that intimidating? Was it easier than you thought?
It was easier than I thought. I just Googled how to write a book, and you know, YouTube's a wonderful thing, but it broke it down into a vision map. I can't remember what it's called, but where you just, you know, you write the main idea and then you draw lines off of that, and I brain dump it. And then after you brain dump it, you just do that for each chapter. And now you've got your entire outline. And then once you've got your outline, you know, it was me on a park bench for about 3 weeks, no ChatGPT. And I was just typing away. And I guess they say your first book's a lot easier to write than your next, because it's, you know, your whole life's worth of knowledge you dump into there. So I don't know how many more books I'm going to write, to be honest with you, but I am really excited to share this one with, you know, everyone out there. I was literally just, you know, I had in mind the whole time when Wyatt was starting at 22, what did I wish I would have learned? Cause I made so many mistakes, guys, so many mistakes. And so, you know, if I can, you know, save you from just one of them of the thousand, then it's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Wyatt, it's been an absolute joy to have you on, and you shared so much wisdom for us, both with just financial kind of intelligence and everything, being able to get into a little bit on specifics with real estate, and also what it means to incorporate all that as a Christ follower. So remind us again when the book comes out and where we can get it at.
Awesome. So October 17th, it's coming out. Your First 100 Units, The Real Estate Investor's Playbook to Scaling a Rental Portfolio. And it's going to be available on Amazon.
Fantastic. And are there any other, like a website or social media places that people can contact you after the show?
Yeah. Well, I'm super active on Instagram and Facebook. You can look me up, Wyatt Buys Buildings. And if you want to get in touch with me, I do offer consulting services. So I've helped over 20 students now buy over $3 million worth of real estate. And so I help people scale portfolios. If you're interested in that, go to wyattsimon.com, WyattSimon.com. And you can fill in an intake to see if we're going to be a good fit together.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I'll include that stuff down in the description below. So definitely check that out. And Wyatt, once again, thanks so much for being on today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Johnny.
Absolutely. And thank you to everybody that tuned in today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.